Reading from Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by Srila Prabhupada. We open up to the second chapter, the ABCs, text number 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Antavanta.
Antavanta.
Ime.
Deha.
Nityashyokta.
Nityashyokta.
Sarirna. Anashino.
Anashino.
Rameshyasya.
Rameshyasya.
Tasmad.
Tasmad.
Yudyashva.
Yudyashva.
Bharata.
Bharata.
What is this? So I'll chant. Antavanta ime deha nityashyokta sharirana anashino pranashyasya tasmad yujashva bharata antavanta
perishable
ime
all these
deha
material bodies
Nityasya,
eternal in existence,
Ukta,
are said,
Sarirnaha,
of the embodied soul,
Anashina,
never to be destroyed,
Aprameyasya,
immeasurable,
Tushmat,
therefore.
Yudyashva,
fight,
Bharata,
Odesan
Bharata.
Turn
a little bit this way. That's good.
Translation,
the material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore, fight, O descendant of Bharata. Purport, the material body is perishable by nature. It may perish immediately, but it may do so after 100 years. It is a question of time only. There is no chance of maintaining it indefinitely. But the spirit soul is so minute that it cannot even be seen by an enemy, to say nothing of being killed. As mentioned in the previous verse, it is so small that no one can have any idea how to measure its dimension. So from both viewpoints, there is no cause of lamentation. Because the living entity, as he is, cannot be killed, nor can the material body be saved for any length of time or permanently protected. The minute particle of the whole spirit acquires this material body according to his work, and therefore observance of religious principles should be utilized. In the Vedanta Sutras, the living entity is qualified as light because he is part and parcel of the supreme light. As sunlight maintains the entire universe, so the light of the soul maintains this material body. As soon as the spirit soul is out of this body, the body begins to decompose, and therefore it is the spirit soul which maintains this body. The body itself is unimportant. Arjuna was advised to fight and not sacrifice the cause of religion for material bodily considerations. Om Agyantimadandasya Pongindashakaya Chuksudimiritam Ganatasmaya Sigurveenamaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Shtapitam Yaya Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Vedanti Shvavadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Bhunityananda Shvyadvaita Shvasvasa Hare Krishna
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, L, M, N, O, P. I always forget the second half.
Therefore, it's required that sometimes we have a refresher course.
Just like I'm working on, I hate to say it here in Seattle, I'm working on my new Mac beer. Macintosh? This is the world of Microsoft. But that Macintosh comes from some evil place called Sacramento. Steve Jobs. So my Macintosh, well, I won't tell you who's training me because he may get arrested by the CIA. Someone's training me on the Macintosh, and there's all kinds of little interesting buttons, really good, as we say in the Mac world, above Vista. When I bought my Mac, I walked in the store, and all the guys in the store, it was a big store in San Diego, they had black t-shirts on with white letters, above Vista. What kind of a competition? Yeah, we're getting trained, so little buttons, right? Cool buttons. You could do like really far out things and widgets and all kinds of things you wouldn't even know about. But there's one refresher button, right? You're doing your email, you're actually doing your web pages and stuff, and sometimes you just want to clear everything so you can get back to the basics, so you push the refresh button. So once in a while, in Krishna consciousness, we need a refresher course. We say sometimes back to basics, or sometimes, you know, you're not doing so well, so we say back to square one. Sometimes it's good to have a refresher course, sometimes it's back to basics, sometimes it's good to go back to square home. What is it in Monopoly? You go back to?
Pass go.
Huh?
Do not pass go.
You know, pass go, but you have to go back to?
Back to square one.
Back to square one, I guess that's where it comes from. Back to square one. So this is back to square one. Second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, these teen verses. 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, the teen verses. How we're not the material body. Oh no, another class on we're not the body. But as we've said a number of times, there's a difference between gyan and vigyan. There's a difference between memorizing and there's a difference between realization. Just like yesterday, one of the Matajis very proudly says, my son knows three chapters of Bhagavad Gita. I said, oh, really? Can I hear a few shlokas? So what's the translation? Well, this blank face. Don't know the translation for the verses. So it's nice, the kids are learning the verses, but it's nice to know the translations, and it's nice to realize the translations. This is the goal. Gyan means knowledge, and vigyan means realized knowledge. We actually want to capture the essence, we want to capture the spirit, we want to understand actually what the verse is saying. So, again, to realize I'm not the body, this is something very profound in Krishna consciousness. It takes many years. Perhaps it takes lifetimes. If we actually realize we were not the body, then we would never be disturbed. Our senses would never be agitated. The mind would never be disturbed. So we have to go back. And here's some of the basic philosophy. And that's our foundation in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada said here, this is a revolutionary concept in Western society. The body is unimportant. Whoa. The body is unimportant. Of course, Prabhupada's not making some fanatical statement. Of course, the body is important because as Sanatana Goswami heard from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Lord himself, Sanatana Goswami had developed a disease, contracted disease by going to the jungle where he had these terrible sores on his body, like boils kind of, and they were oozing liquid pus and stuff. So he, that's disturbing me, I can hear that, turn it off. He And Mahaprabhu was coming in every day to see Sanatana Goswami, and out of great affection he was embracing him. And he continued to embrace him even when he had these ugly sores on his body, and sometimes the wet pus would come onto the body of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Sanatana Goswami decided to give up his body. He was just so embarrassed at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because love is blind. Love is blind. I speak of transcendental love. The Lord so much loved his pure devotee, he didn't even consider these oozing sores. He would just embrace him. So Sanatana Goswami was very embarrassed by this situation. So he decided to give up his life. He was going to throw himself under the wheels of the Rath Yatra cart in a couple of weeks' time when the Rath Yatra took place. He had decided that. It happens sometimes in India. Therefore, we get this word in the English dictionary, juggernaut. The juggernaut means one who gives up his life to suicide under the wheels of the cart, the juggernaut. The British saw the people in Puri doing this and they were just stunned. But the Puri Vasis, they know, of course not something that we should broadcast widely, but they knew that to leave one's body at the feet of Jagannath is something glorious. Die under the wheels of the Jagannath's chariot, then you achieve a very high destination. So sometimes it's there. Hard for Westerners to understand. The sati, the wife, when the husband would leave untimely, we always consider death to be untimely, except when you're like 101, then everyone expects you to go. But the husband leaves, and the wife, she doesn't have any children. She ascends the funeral pyre, and she, as the fire is ignited, she jumps into the fire and dies. So, what is this? The understanding was that she would go to where her husband was. She considered the pain of the fire to be less severe than the pain of separation from her husband. And it wasn't in a mundane material sense like we might think. It was because the husband was her Pati Guru. And because he was helping her advance in Krishna consciousness by his illustrious example and by his good teachings, she was very attached to her husband. Mainly, she was attached to him for that reason, that he was her shelter and he was guiding her on the path of Krishna consciousness. And Vedic age women didn't take diksha. They were taught to be very attached to their husbands from a very young age. I met one devotee, Umapati Das. He's the temple president in Nairobi, Kenya. He's an Indian gentleman. In his 50s, I'm not sure. Well, now it's my phone. Oh my God, how embarrassing. Giriraswami. It's Giriraswami. That's not so embarrassing. I got a call from Giriraswami.
Put him on the speakerphone.
No, yeah. They will start a tradition. I'm locking my phone. So the, where was I? Oh yes, I considered very attached to the husband because she was training her in Krishna consciousness. Well, that's even worse. Okay, let's turn off all cell phones and all babies. Okay, now we're ready. So she's so attached to the husband that when he left, it was just impossible for her to go on. Like Prabhupada says, when the spiritual master leaves, the disciple should cry in grief that separation is there. But you must go on, of course, serving in separation, Vani. But anyway, the lady would, so this was abused, of course, in time. Sometimes the women were forced to ascend the funeral pyre. It was a voluntary thing. Sometimes they were forced because of various financial reasons and things like this. It became quite ugly. So the British outlawed the sati. But at least in close quarters like this, we can discuss it and we can understand why it took place. So similarly, the throwing oneself under the wheels of the chariot, the Rathayatakar, it was understood that only an advanced soul could do that, of course, but the very high destination. Actually, interestingly enough, Prabhupada once told us that his father, Gaur Mohan Day, in his elderly day, old age, he contracted a type of disease, which is a long-term illness. So what he did, Prabhupada said, this is what the sadhus used to do towards the end of life when they'd given up all attachments to this world and they were wholly and solely attached to God and they'd done their duties, they preached, and now they were somewhat incapacitated. Rather than slowly wait for the end like that, they would just give up eating and drinking. They'd give up food, they'd take a little water, and gradually, day by day, they'd give up the water, so then they would die the natural death. You could say it's a type of suicide. But there was no reason left. Actually, a devotee doesn't have any attachments to this world, at least in theory, so the only reason he stays here is really just to continue the mission of his spiritual master. We don't have any real interest in this world. So in elderly age, the tradition was, and we also saw that Prabhupada, in his last days, he gave up food and water like that. And the end is near, so you just give up and you go. So these things are there. A great soul. So Sanatana Goswami, he decided that this is so embarrassing. The Lord is embracing my wet sores on my body. He said, I will throw myself under the wheels of the chariot. But of course, Lord is Avighna Surat. He's omnipresent. And he's all-knowing, Bhagavatam describes. Abhijna Swarat, Krishna. We're not all-knowing and we're not omnipresent. We're not everywhere. This is a quality which distinguishes the Lord from us. So because he's everywhere and because he's all-knowing, he's in the heart of Sanatana Goswami, he heard that. He understood that. So one day he approached him and he said, my dear Sanatana, I understand you're planning to give up this body. Sanatana Goswami said, yes, sir. And he said, you can't do that. Because that body doesn't belong to you. It belongs to me. You're my devotee. You surrendered your life to me. You're my shiksha. You're my disciple. So that body belongs to me. Actually, this initiation, Prabhupada said, these beads, they're kuntima, kantimala. This is like the dog collar. I'm the dog of my guru. Woof, woof. Come, sit, jump, eat, move, catch the ball. Yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. Chant 16 rounds. Yes, follow the principles. Yes, sir. Open this temple. Yes, sir. Distribute books. Yes, sir. We're sold out, servants of our Guru Maharaj. But he's a very nice master. We don't mind. Takes very good care of us. And Lord takes very good care of the surrendered soul. Yogikshemam baham yaham. For my devotee, one who surrendered everything to me, I provide whatever he needs and I protect whatever he has. We don't mind being a sold-out servant of Guru and Krishna. So Mahaprabhu said, that's my body and I have many plans for that body. How to establish my movement and spread the teachings of Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So don't do it. So we know we're not the body, but Prabhupada said here, the body is unimportant. So this is basically an instruction to materialistic people, stressing the more important principle of the soul. But we can't carry it too far. The body is unimportant. Yeah. But it's important if we can use it nicely in the service of Guru and Krishna. So we maintain body and soul together so that we can execute the instructions of our spiritual master. In due course of time, the body will perish. It's important in that sense. It's important also in the sense that this human form of life, in this body, it can take us from A to B to C to D. This body can take us back home, help to take us back home, back to God. Of all the various types of bodies in this world, the human form of life is the most important because with our buddhi, with our intelligence, the special gift that God has given the human beings, with this intelligence we can perceive, understand our deeper spiritual nature. We can understand who is God. And we can understand our eternal relationship with God. Although we're not the body, we take good care of it. Just like you may not be the car, you may not be your car, but you take good care of your car because your car can take you to your office and bring you back home. So it's important. But in order to help us understand, because for the materialistic person, this is a very difficult idea to accept that they're not the body. It's just very foreign to them, any other idea that we may be spirit soul. We analyze it in different ways. Like Prabhupada gives a very nice explanation here. He says, he gives the example of the sun. How the sun lights up the entire universe. How big is this universe? You just have to leaf through some scientific magazine and you see all those, you know, distant galaxies and black holes, and it's just incomprehensible how vast is this one universe in which we live, and it's just a mustard seed in a huge bag of universes, unlimited, which make up the cosmic manifestation. But even our own universe is so large, we can hardly comprehend these distant galaxies, so forth. But in our understanding in the universe, there's many planets, Vedic Shastra says, but there's one star, the sun, which lights up the entire universe. All darkness, but one sun lighting up the universe. The heat and the light of the sun can be experienced or seen in a far distant place. But it's only one tiny little globe in this huge, dense mass of the universe. So in the same way, although this body is very big, what to speak of our body, what about the body of an elephant? What's manipulating it? One tiny little spiritual spark. So someone can say, how is it possible that something which is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in dimension can have such an effect on this huge, dense mass of matter? Well, we see that the sun is very tiny compared to the dimensions of the universe, but because of the presence of the sun, there's heat and light all the way to the distant corners of the universe. So the soul, situated within the body, it's tiny, very minute. It's hovering in the life airs in the region of the heart. Because of the presence of that tiny particle of spirit soul, there's consciousness from the top of our head to the tip of our toe. The soul is more powerful than the body. Spirit is more powerful than matter. That's the idea. Spirit is more powerful than matter. Matter is subject to destruction, but the soul by nature is eternal. Krishna says in Gita, Ajayate mriyate vakadachinnayam bhutva bhavita vanaviya. For the soul is never birth nor death, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. He's unborn, undying, primeval. He's not slain when the body is slain, because matter is inferior to spirit. Is that a baby or a phone? Anyway, the question may arise, if spirit is more powerful than matter, how is it that the spirit soul gets entangled in matter and identifies with matter and thus has to suffer? This is a logical progression of thought. If spirit is infinitely more powerful than matter, which is temporary and subject to destruction, how is it that the soul comes under the influence of the inferior energy? It's a good question. If the soul is so powerful, najayate, mriyate, va, kadachin, nayam, buddha, va, how is it that that particle of soul becomes completely bewildered by maya and takes on a material body? How does it happen? There's two answers to that question, two ideas that come to mind. One is that there's the supreme soul and there's the finite soul. There's the super soul and there's the jiva soul. The super soul is Krishna. He never comes under the influence of material energy. But the tiny jivatma, we're described as tatastha shakti. There's the material, there's the spiritual, and then there's the marginal energy, which is us. We're spiritual, but because we're so tiny particles of spirit soul, tatastha shakti, we can come under the influence of either the powerful material energy or the powerful spiritual energy. We're just on the line there. We come under the control of both. That's one answer. Another answer is that when we become rebellious to the Lord places us under the jurisdiction of the material energy, under Maya. Prabhupada gave the example, he said, just like when he was a little boy, and sometimes he would play hooky. I don't think the Indian kids even know what hooky is. Do you know what hooky is? You do. Oh my God. I thought they don't do that anymore in school. When I was a kid, I'll tell you. But Prabhupada used to play hooky. It means that he wouldn't go to school. I guess I don't know if I should be saying this. You can tell your mom and dad, Prabhupada did it. He didn't go to school, so why should I go to school? Uh-oh, I'm going to be in trouble now. But listen to the rest of the story. When Prabhupada didn't go to school, then his mother, because, you know, young boys are quite energetic, and sometimes it gets to a certain point where the parents can't hold them down. The boys get big and strong like that, and it's hard. Parents can't catch them and spank them anymore. So Prabhupada was getting quite robust, and he wouldn't go to school. So his mother, Rajini, she couldn't catch little Abhay and, you know, give him the sauce, so to speak. So she would hire a man called Domodar. Yes, Domodar was the person in the village who would catch all the boys who were playing hooky, and he would tie them up with a rope and pull them to school. So I just heard that our congregation has hired one man, and they call him Domodar Das. So any of the boys try this trick of playing hooky, we've hired one gentleman called Domodar. Because he has a rope, right? And he takes you to school. Like, it'd be very embarrassing if you're out of the car and there's some man pulling you on a rope into your classroom. I'm trying to explain this. Anyway, that's the analogy. So when the living entity becomes rebellious, then the Lord, he engages Maya Devi, and we're taken to the school. We come to the material world, school of life, to learn that we can't be happy separate from Krishna. So she engages us like this, and she creates this whole phantasmagoria of material life in such a way as to keep us bound here. Our attractions to the material world are that which keep us bound up. Life after life after life. So the gunas, the ropes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, these are described as ropes in Vedic terminology. They bind us to the material world. Our desires are what keep us here. Of course, we can't blame it on Maya. Oh, Maya, it's Maya's fault. No, she creates the phantasmagoria, but it's because of our strong desires to enjoy separately from Krishna that we're bound. It's our own attachments which to this world of birth and death which keep us here. Once there was a disciple, he went to his guru and he said, Guruji, you know, the reason I'm not making so much progress is because Maya Devi, she just will not let go of me. You have to understand, Guruji, you can't blame me for not making progress and relinquishing my material attachments. After all, it's all Maya's kingdom, and she's the one which is keeping me bound here. So if you could just speak to her instead of always chastising me, then we could finish this business up. So the guru said, you rascal. So then the guru left. And the next day during class, the guru disappeared, and suddenly all the boys could hear him outside. Let go! Let go of me! Just let go of me! What are you... Let go of me! And all the boys ran outside, and that one boy, he was shocked to see his guru embracing a big tree. And the guru was saying, let go of me, you tree! Let go of me! So the boy went up, he said, Guruji, the tree's not holding you. You're holding on to the tree. Just let go. So the guru immediately let go of the tree and turned around and said, yes, in the same way, Maya's not holding on to you. You are holding on to Maya. Let go. You understand? Yeah, now I understand. But of course, the illusion is very tempting. But it's an illusion. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, the whole show is only temporary. It's a whole phantasmagoria created. So we shouldn't be tricked by anything that Maya has to offer in this world. In the Bhagavatam, in the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, there's a description, how, first verse actually of the Bhagavatam, how the Maya Devi has created such a kingdom that sometimes even the demigods are confused or they're attracted. And the example is given, just like sometimes you see land on water or you see water on land, in the same way the Lord's energies are such that even a great demigod can be tricked in that way. So we have to be careful. And the two greatest types of Maya, Prabhupada said that Maya has two tricks up her sleeve. One is that we think we're the body. And the other spectrum, we think we're God. These are the two tricks that she has up her sleeve, very powerful. I am not. I am the body, or I am God. We have to overcome both, actually. Overcome this attraction to the body and the pleasures of the body. And overcome, at some stage, not ourselves, but there are those who advocate that philosophy that we are God. We have to overcome that. Prabhupada said, told us one time in Detroit, that the yogi is practicing his meditation and he becomes purified, and at one point he gets a glimpse of the super soul within the heart, and he concludes, there I am, that is me, the super soul. So he probably said, without the direction of a bona fide Vaishnava spiritual master, even spiritual life can be a little bit risky sometimes. One can fall short of the goal. Rather, if the yogi had a Vaishnava guru, he would clearly understand, that's not me, that's the Lord in my heart. And the next step in the yoga process, I should stop being a hatha yogi and I should surrender to the Lord and become a bhakti yogi. Of all yogis, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who is worshipping me in devotion, he is the highest of all. So, at every step we need the direction of Hari, Guru, and Vaishnava, so as not to fall prey to the temptations that the material world offers. Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki.
Jaya.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jaya.
So any questions this morning? Yes?
Wow. What would Prabhupada do when he's like hooky?
When?
What would he do?
When he?
Yeah, what would he do when he played hooky?
What would he do when he played hooky? Well, one time he took some matches, and he was playing with matches, and he burned his dhoti. Yeah. And he got a little scar in his leg from that. There was a scar, a burn mark on Prabhupada's knee. And that's mentioned in the Lilamrita. Oh, he would. So best not to play hooky, that's the idea. Up to no good. So everybody in the material world is up to no good. Even if it's good, Kaviraj Goswami says, the concept of good and bad in this world, it's wrong. It's all bad. Even what we consider to be good. Of course, goodness, one lives in the mode of goodness as a devotee, it's helpful. It's a stepping stone towards transcendence. But just to be good itself means that one next lifetime one will take a birth somewhere in the mode of goodness, but it means again birth, disease, old age and death. So basically in the material world, from the top down to the bottom, everyone's up to no good. So we don't want to play hooky. We want to go back to school, back to Krishna consciousness, and back home, back to God. That was a pretty deep question. What did Prabhupada do when he played hooky? That was the toughest question I ever had. But at least there was a question. One of them you're doing right now. There's 9 processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Shmaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atma. So can you answer his question? Hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet, making friendship, offering everything to the Lord. There are 9 processes, but the most effective is Shravanam, hearing, and chanting are the most effective. Because our condition is compared to that of a sleeping man. We're sleeping, slumbering. So when you're sleeping, you pretty much forget everything. You forget the important things. You're dreaming, but your dreaming is not so important. What's important is the world of reality. We don't want to live in the dream world. It's all fantasy. We want to wake up to reality. But in material world, we are slumbering in a world of fantasy. So we want to wake up to the reality of Krishna consciousness. So how do you wake a sleeping man up? Through sound. So how do you wake up the slumbering soul? Through sound. And therefore, Prabhupada said, of all our senses, in regards to spiritual life, of all our senses, the most important sense is the sense of hearing. We can save ourselves, we can deliver ourselves from material existence primarily through the sense of hearing. And Prabhupada, he gave a very interesting analogy. He said, just like if you're sleeping in your home and a burglar enters, you can't see the burglar, you can't smell him, you can't taste him, you can't touch him. All the senses are of no value in that sense. But if he makes a little slight improper move, he bangs something, then you can wake up and be alerted to the danger. My son was telling me, Gorshakti, that the other day that he and his wife and children were sleeping upstairs, and he woke up because he heard a burglar enter into the house through the window, through the screen window. He heard the knife cut the screen, and he heard the glass being cut. They had they cut, but it doesn't smash, but they cut a hole out of the glass, and he heard someone coming through and walking, and he heard the television being lifted up. So he was alerted to the danger, so instinctively he was getting up. His wife said, "Where are you going?" He said, "Well, there's some burglars downstairs." So she said, "All the reason not to go." Don't go. So they made the choice, the better of two evils. Go down and fight the burglars or just cut your losses. So they reported it to the police, and the police said, "It's a very good thing you didn't go downstairs, because there have been the same type of burglaries in this a greater extended area over a period of time, and several times those burglars were confronted and they murdered the people who confronted them." Anyway, that doesn't really have much to do with the story, but discretion is the better part of valor. But my point was that you can be alerted to the danger of material existence. The most effective sense is the sense of hearing. So just like we're doing now, if we could only do just this, we could be delivered. For each of those 9 processes of devotional service, there's a corresponding devotee who perfected that particular hearing, chanting, remembrance. So Maharaj Parikshit was delivered just by sitting at the lotus feet of the spiritual master and hearing the signs of Krishna consciousness, Bhagavad Sapta. Now that's so important, so much glorified, that in India today, even today, for 7 days, they have the recitation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Like one of our devotees is very expert at that, His Holiness Lokanath Maharaj. He'll come to a temple. Has he come here? He'll come to a temple and for 7 days he'll recite the Bhagavatam. You could say it's like a summary, because if you tried to repeat every single verse, it might, but summary of the Bhagavatam in 7 days. From Shraddha, initial faith, to Prema Bhakti. 10th canto describes the ecstatic pastimes of Krishna with his liberated devotees in the spiritual world. You could just hear, sitting here, like Krishna says to Arjuna, Tat Srinu, don't be restless, don't let the mind wander, I'm speaking to you. This is enough, this Gita is enough. Prabhupada told us one time, if you just heard and served the Gita, that would be sufficient for your deliverance in Krishna consciousness. But he's kindly given us so many scriptures as well. But that hearing process is so potent. It is said in the Vedas, by sound one is conditioned, and by sound one becomes liberated. And therefore we sit every day and we chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Even if you can't, if you're not very inclined towards philosophy, because you need some Sumedha Saha, some intelligence, and a lot of our intelligence has been affected by our activities in this world. It's been weakened or destroyed. If you could just sit and hear these three words, Hare Krishna and Rama, in the form of the Maha Mantra, that would be sufficient to deliver you from all ignorance to full spiritual enlightenment, Krishna consciousness. How do we know? Another cell phone. How do we know? In the Shikshastakam is stated, O my Lord, your holy name alone can render all benediction upon the living entities. Thus you have hundreds and millions of names like Krishna, Govinda, etc. In all these names you have invested your full transcendental energies. And you're so kind that there's no hard and fast rules in the chanting of this Maha Mantra. You've made approach you so easy, but in the mood of an aspiring devotee, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, unfortunately, I have no attraction. So the secret is just to develop this attraction to this one activity of kirtana, chanting. Therefore it says in the 11th canto, Krishna kalair dosha nidhe raja aste eka mahaguna kirtana deva krishna sya mukta sanga. Hey king, this age now is an ocean of inauspiciousness, but there's one saving grace. Say, kirtana deva krishna, just by this kirtan,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So therefore, if we find ourselves, if there's some temptation coming, we don't have to do like Hercules. Hercules wanted to test his strength in being able to resist temptation. So it's in the Iliad and the Odyssey, I believe, that there was some part of the world somewhere where you would enter into a particular bay. And on either side of the bay, as you entered in, there were these beautiful women, extremely beautiful women, who had exceptionally beautiful voices. And when the explorers would come to that part of the world in order to plunder the riches of that part of the world, they would have to sail through this bay, and they would hear these beautiful, like these sirens, these beautiful girls, and they think, oh, this is so nice. So they would go and they would sail to the shore of the bay to enjoy with these beautiful girls, but these girls were very expert warriors, and they would kill any of the sailors who came onto the land, chop them up. So it was described that no one could resist the temptation of these ladies. Their voices and their forms are so beautiful. No one had ever gone through. So Hercules, he decided he was going to prove himself how strong and how controlled he was. So he took a boat through that bay. But he couldn't resist. And his men had to tie him to the mast. And only by being tied to the mast did he survive this ordeal of going into the bay and out. He couldn't do it. But in Krishna consciousness, we can resist any temptation that Maya may offer, not by tying our hands up and tying ourselves to a post. We simply have to chant. Hare
Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Is there any example of that? Yes. Haridas Thakur, he was a Namacharya. And well, there's two times, actually, that he was tested by a beautiful lady. One was some people became very envious of him because of his purity. So they hired one prostitute to approach him and cause him to fall down. And she came and she was a very beautiful girl. But by hearing him chant, she surrendered to him as his disciple. And another instance was that Maya Devi herself came proposed to Haridas Thakur. He said to her, yes, that he would fulfill her desire. But he said that he had his vow to fulfill. And he had a vow to chant 300,000 names a day. And it took him about 18 hours a day. So he would sit and chant. So he said, as soon as I finish my chanting, then I will surely enjoy with you. In the meantime, you just sit here and wait patiently. So he was chanting all night. And she was sitting there patiently, and naturally she heard the sound vibration of Hare Krishna from the lips of a pure devotee. Hare
Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So she had to wait three nights because the next morning, since she had to go back to work, whatever, my name. So every night she was coming. At the end of the third night, she surrendered also to Haridas Thakur. Maya Devi became the initiated disciple of Haridas Thakur. Interesting. So that there is to illustrate the power of the holy name. So your question was, how do we overcome? How do we begin the process of devotional service to overcome? Well, the very first thing we hear when we come to Krishna consciousness is to chant holy names. So we encourage the newcomers, the intermediates, and the advanced devotees to chant the holy names. So on that auspicious note, we'll conclude. I see our cooks are getting a little nervous because they keep reheating the prasadam as I go on. So we'll stop there and take Bhagavad Prasadam. Srinam Prabhu ki, Bhagavad Gita as it is ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srishi Bhagavad Prasadam ki, Gaur Premanandi
ki,
Hare Krishna.